Yeah. Welcome to Coffee and Cannabis. I'm your host, Eliza, and this is
Corey. What up?
And today, you already know, we getting heavy hitting with the ladies. I'm making sure that I'm bringing all the boss cannabis women through the building. And today, we have Safita from the United Empowerment Party. Please give it up.
I feel special.
Yes, yes. So, but you already know, before we get into it, coffee, it's going to be a late night today. So, you know, I had to hop over to my homies over at K1. You know, bodega on the corner, stop there.
Bodega special.
Get your wraps, get your coffee, all the things that you need. And Corey, what are we smoking on?
This is called Banana Daddy.
Banana Daddy.
I know you don't know nothing about that. It's okay. But yeah, it's a good one.
Leave Banana Daddy. Cannabis to have the interesting name.
Yeah.
You know, there's no real rules or regulations on the name.
Okay.
It's absolutely. Like 26% THC, so it's decent.
What the fuck is this?
I told you, I can't roll hemp. Just use the best bud.
Good.
This is terrifying.
I can't roll. They just fall apart.
Jesus. Oh, my goodness. Yeah. All right. Well,
I smoke blunts.
You know, do good. Get high. Be well. Use hemp. But also, get a better roller. All right. So, this woman is incredible. When we talk about politics, policy, and cannabis, that's not a conversation a lot of folks can carry. But that's not the case here. So what I know we know about the party, which you co-founded and you're also the president of, right?
Yes.
And this is with Redman.
Yes, Mr. Global Noble.
Yes, yes. Jersey's own.
Yeah, my big brother and mentor. Shout out, bro. What's up?
Shout out to
but, you, man. Before we get into the United Empowerment Party, I do want to talk about just what you were doing before cannabis. I feel like a lot of times people always just talk about like what we're doing right now in cannabis, but they don't know the stories of what brought people to cannabis and also the background that they had that is helping them strengthen the value that they add to cannabis.
Oh, that's a wonderful question. No, seriously, I love that you're asking that because there is a lot of misconception about what people do in the industry before or, you know, being that we're consumers, patients, you know, all of the above. And prior to coming into cannabis, I was in the tech and gaming space. I worked for Xbox and I loved it. I was a market manager. I was one of the top 50 market managers in the country. Won Microsoft Masters within my first 6 months of starting the program.
Yo, put respect on her name. Yo.
Thank you.
I'm just saying.
I've always been exceptional at connecting people and to, you know, train and develop people. I always say for me, success is better when you can duplicate it in others. So I used to always try to bring out the best in other people. My market was always popping. Like, people knew me. When I came into the retail space, they knew it was a party. So being able to do that and bring culture into a corporate space, you know, I had natural hair. For those who do know me and see me on social media, my hair could be blue today, purple tomorrow, green next week, you know. So to be able to bring that into the corporate space, I felt like I was empowering a lot of women who look like me and who have natural hair and, you know, all of those things. And then, you know, continuing my career in the tech space, and then that led me into cannabis. I started with, you know, the ancillary side, developing technology for tracking how much people consume as far as THC, being able to relay that information to, you know, doctors, medical professionals. So it was something that we were trying to implement in states, and Massachusetts was one of the first states that wanted to adopt the technology. But when it comes to government, it takes a really long time. So we just continued to develop the technology, which we still do have, and was also co-founded with me and Red. And then I started to look at other ways to be able to maximize opportunities in cannabis by addressing the technological advances that are needed. Because I feel personally that we have the opportunity to dominate tech in cannabis. You really don't hear much about technology except seed to sale. And I think for a lot of black techies, entrepreneurs, those that are in that space, we can really dominate that here. So I'm a big champion for that. And then I started to, you know, go more into the medical side of things because I ended up having a medical crisis with my child. And that really, like, sent me into overdrive in the industry.
So I'm just trying to get the timeline. So you were in gaming. What made you jump into that industry? Like, were you always into tech, or I know so many people who want to make video games and be in video games. Yes. Like, as a Black woman, how did you even get there?
So I've always been a gamer, still am. So, you know, She's So Brooklyn on Xbox. No, but
ooh, you about to get that smoke.
Yeah. So that's my gamer tag. But I felt like there wasn't really any representation in gaming. There's not
that.
Many of us
yeah,
in gaming,
that.
Especially in gaming development. So I just, you know, I didn't think I was going to go into a career like working for Xbox and doing that kind of program. But I applied for something and the company was hidden. They didn't say who you were interviewing for, but it had all these things about gaming and doing events. And I was like, oh, this sounds lit. So I applied for it. And then when I go, I find out it's Xbox.
Yo, that's dope.
That's so kind of dope.
That is
I was
dope.
So shocked, right? So I'm sitting here like, so who's the company? They're like, actually, it's Xbox. I was like, it's who? It's what? So that was amazing to me because I used to be the kid at home, you know, watching G4, watching like E3, and I ended up being at E3 in 2015.
Eliza don't know what none of that shit is.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm speaking
but I, see the I know what yes. E3 is.
I
yeah.
see the joy, and I'm happy
yes,
about the joy
like
I
black
see.
Black girl joy. Yes. But it was so incredible because people were coming up to me, and they when I would go into a GameStop or other retail store, they didn't expect me. And when I come in and I'm like, yes, I'm your market manager for this market, and they're like, wait, what? So it was really empowering, and it just showed me that there needs to be more representation in that space, because yeah. even when it comes to women gaming and, you know, streaming and all of that, there's a lot of women that are good at, you know, Call of Duty and, you know, all the games like the playing GTA or Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat,
Overwatch.
Don't want no smoke with me. Yeah, Overwatch and Mortal Kombat, just want to throw that out there. But no, like, it just was something that I felt I could really contribute something to bringing the next generation into the space. And I actually use that as a way to also help like troubled youth. So I used to volunteer at a youth detention center, and my way into really getting to them and showing them other opportunities in tech was talking about the gaming and working at Xbox. So it was an opportunity to really show like youth that look like me that the opportunities are endless for you. And yeah. just because you're here doesn't mean that you can't come out of this situation and do something better. So that just honestly also amplified my advocacy, because I didn't like going into spaces where I was like either the only one or one of very few. So I wanted to kick doors open and just bring people in. And that's what I'm doing in cannabis too. So it just kind of went hand in hand.
1 second. Talking about, you said obviously you had a complications, childbirth, not what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. Mother of six.
Yes.
That games.
Yes.
been to E3.
Yes.
Works for Xbox.
Yes.
And now in the weed industry.
Yep.
Big ups for cool mom vibes, yo.
Yeah. Cool mom vibes.
That's like the fly mom on your block. Everybody knows. It's like, yeah, I'm going over to John's house because, you know, his mom cool.
Mom got that fire. She got that gas. No.
Yeah. Yeah. Mom got gas.
She loves to smoke weed and stuff.
Yeah. She's got all the new Xbox games and she, you know, lets her smoke.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
And she always has a lot of snacks.
My sons loved me during that time. They still do love me now, but they used to always say, you want to go back to Xbox? I'm like, come on.
So now we arrive at cannabis.
Yes.
And this is because something that happened with your kid.
Yes. Now, I was already working in the industry, but it changed the trajectory of everything when I found out that my daughter had a very rare congenital heart defect, and I didn't know anything about it. I didn't even know children could be born with congenital heart disease. Like, when you think of heart disease, mm-hmm. heart failure and things like that, you don't think of children being born with it. And then the statistics that I learned, that the majority of these cases, there's more children that die every year from congenital heart defects and disease than every pediatric cancer combined. Wow. And I felt that was like mind-blowing for me. And the fact that I didn't know anything about it until I found out about my daughter. And her condition is called hypoplastic left heart syndrome, which basically means that the left side of her heart didn't fully develop. So they told me on a scale of 1 to 10, they told me and my husband that hers was about a 9, which was like jaw-dropping. And I couldn't, it felt like somebody sucked all the air out of the room. Like, I couldn't believe what I was hearing, because I'm waiting for them to say, okay, but we can do something about it. And there's like, the only option she has is heart surgery. And she would have to have 3 of them before she turned 4 years old. And the first heart surgery she had, she was 3 days old. And she had to get reconstructive heart surgery to get her heart to function as is with the single ventricle. And then when she went for her second stage operation at 5 months old, they learned she had heart failure. And they said, we're going to have to list her for a heart transplant or she won't survive.
At 5 months old?
At 5 months old.
You stronger than me.
So at that moment, I did all the research I possibly could, because I said, her whole life is going to change. Because it's one thing to have heart surgeries. Once you are transplanted, you have to always think about the possibility of rejection. That's the risk for every organ transplant patient. So I did a bunch of research and found that the University of South Carolina did a research study that shows that cannabis reduces the likelihood of organ rejection. So that was like the silver lining for me. And I said, that's it. I'm doing it. I'm going to figure out how to administer cannabis.
What made
you
go look for another solution like that? Like, what prompted you to go find like a research study?
What prompted me was because I didn't want my daughter to have to take all these different pharmaceutical drugs. Like, the things that she had to go through, the medicine that she had to take, like, everything you can imagine was connected to her. And
at 5 months.
So it was like, it was crazy. Like, even just thinking about it now, it's a lot. Like, and as a mom, and as a Black mom, understanding what maternal death is in this country for Black women. And so I'm literally living this, and I'm seeing the health disparities in my face, because I'm seeing how things change and how things are different for us unless we advocate, unless we speak up, unless we are there every single day. I never left the hospital. I was always there to make sure that I was listening in the rounds, knowing what doctors were saying. And I just said, you know, if this, I felt like I didn't have any other choice. And I felt like, you know, what do I have to lose? I know what cannabis does for me. I know what it did for me, even helping me deal with all of that. Because that's a lot to deal with. And
that's true. Anxiety.
And then you don't have a blueprint. I had to figure out how to microdose her on my own. So I literally had to, like, be patient, wait until she was kind of out of the woods and start to administer it, because I didn't want to do it while she was so early after her transplant. So when she was close to 1, that's when I started using CBD. And then I started to use CBG because one of the anti-rejection medications can cause cancer. So learning that, I was like, okay, now I need to figure out how do I keep her out of that. And CBG is very powerful. People don't even talk about what CBG does and how it does help to prevent cancer. And so I started to microdose her with the CBD, and then I started adding in the CBG collectively, and that's what she's been taking ever since. Now, mind you, when I did that, I think maybe 2 or 3, not even 3 months, but maybe 2 months into her doing that, they just started taking medications away from her. They said she didn't need them anymore. So right now, today, she only takes 1 medication.
How old is she?
She's 5.
So, cry.
So I know I'm holding on by a thread.
Yeah, you better get me.
Let's slow down 1 second, because I don't think people understand. Like, the CBG component's big because a lot of states, including New Jersey, don't actually push back on cannabis companies listing CBG and the percentages. So even though CBG has had a whole lot of research behind it, and now people are starting to learn that, as you obviously did 5 years ago, the states are still playing catch up. And because there's no official study done on it, like as if a university doing a study is any different when it's cannabis now.
Right.
It make, you know, the research counts unless it's cannabis. states are blocking cannabis companies from really listing CBG, the percentages, how many milligrams of CBG are in a product in order to sell. So, like, you could, you know, as a cannabis company, you make a product, you list, oh, you know, this is going to be one-to-one THC CBD or whatever, or you have now these, like, one-to-one-to-ones. It's, like, of THC, CBD, a lot of them CBN, right? If I wanted to list that same product, but it was CBG, it'd get rejected in most states.
Wow.
Because the research isn't there. So they say.
And for those of you who don't know, CBG is one of the cannabinoids, and there are a ton of them, all compounds of the cannabis plant beyond THC, which is the only one that is psychoactive. But the cannabinoids, some people say cannabinoids, cannabinoids, whatever. Yeah. There's a million ways to say it, but the reality is CBN, CBG, there's so many of them that have power helping people sleep. I think a CBN is very helpful for sleep. So this is powerful stuff that once we do really have the research, and I love that you're talking about this story because this is one that's like life-changing. Your daughter, the doctors couldn't figure it out, and look at you.
And they still...
Yo, it's Dr. Safita now.
I know, because I feel like I went to medical school. Like, there's terminology. They're like, how do you even know this? And
it's called I'm a mother.
Exactly.
And I need my child to live.
Exactly. And when you're a caregiver, you learn... being a woman, being a Black woman, and then being a caregiver, it's like being handicapped three times. Because now when you go back into the corporate world, if they learn of your child's condition or say something happens, she has to be hospitalized. I have to be there.
Yep.
Then it's like, okay, you're not reliable.
Yep.
Or something happens, or if you miss another day, I can have doctor's notes. I can have her surgeon, her nurse practitioners, cardiologists, any of them. And it wouldn't even matter. And so it just really... like open my eyes to just how many women are out here suffering in silence that have children who have illnesses that they don't have any control of. And you're trying to provide, and then you're also trying to be a great mom. And then it's like you're being punished for doing that. And so it's really important to me to put that information out there. And it's like reopening the wound sometimes because, PTSD does not just apply to people who were in the military. I want people to know that. Like, PTSD is a real thing just because of trauma. It doesn't matter what kind of trauma. People can be traumatized just by that kind of situation. And literally going into a hospital and hearing the beeping, the signals, and all of those things, it'll bring you right back.
Triggers.
To that. Yeah. Right. Those are triggers for people. And so for me, it's like the research aspect of it is so important, because had there been research or had there been programs for pediatric patients, I wouldn't have had to figure it out on my own. But I'm glad that I did, because now they can't refute it. I have all her medical records. Mm. I have all the track record of how great she's done. And they'll look at her and they literally call her the poster child for transplant.
Did you log when you administered to take the doctor records and match them to like, on this day, I gave this many?
I have from the time that I started giving it to her, what I started with to what she's taking now. And there hasn't been like any changes. Like even with her medicine that she has to take now, it can go up and down based on her Tacro levels. But it's been steady to where they haven't had to change it for like a really long time. And that lets me know that it's working as well, because their concern with transplant patients is that the cannabinoids could potentially like increase their levels. So they're like, they didn't want to use it. And I'm like, well, I'm literally proof that that's not true. And so I feel that if I can help break that door open and be able to work with children's hospitals, those that are open, I feel like we're the experts. We're the ones that are out here. We have to start going and, getting involved with those things. And that's why I'm glad New York now has a research application for people to apply to do cannabis research. They're the only state that has it. So that's one great thing that I feel definitely came out of New York. But it needs to be in every state. And we need to also be allowed to participate in that and it not just be given to people who have money to fund it, because we can go find what we need if we want to do the research studies, but we're different, our bodies are different, so we need things that are specific to us. And that's what I think a lot of people don't understand either. Our genetic makeup is different. So we're going to need things different from what someone else does, especially because of different things that we have genetically that's passed down. So, you know, that's one of the biggest reasons why I'm, like, super passionate about that.
It's like Shahida Sebi up in here.
What exactly did you do? Like, what did you give her? Because she's an infant at this time.
Yeah, it was a tincture.
Story. Okay.
It was a tincture. And she still takes a tincture. And she doesn't even need a chaser. She's like, she's a pro. You don't even have to put her in her juice. Like, she knows what it is when I get it for her. She's like so easy with it. Even when she was a baby, she never would spit it out. So I was just like, oh, you a G. So it's amazing to see that she's so used to it. It's like, it's just normal for her.
Wow. Wow, that's incredible. So she's five now, and this is to reduce the chance of rejection.
Yes.
Now, how long is that phase of, like, that period that could happen, or is that forever?
That's forever. That's can happen terrible. At any time. That's and they terrible. Tell you after she was transplanted, they said, you know, we have doesn't mean she won't live with this organ for the rest of her life, but they said, you know, it's a possibility that she could need another one in 10 years.
Wow.
So just that hanging over you, I was like, I've got to figure something out, because I can't even imagine going through that again. I just can't.
And you already, like, know. So you're just like, fuck.
Right.
9 years.
Right. Exactly. Years. And you try not to do years. That, but I'm like, she's five now. So I'm like, yeah. She's halfway to that point. And so it's like, it's just one of those things that you try not to think about, but it's there. Because the doctors have to tell you. They don't necessarily want to, but yeah, they have to tell you. But I love her doctors. Her doctors she had in Virginia, they were amazing. They were proactive. They didn't wait till things went south to do something. And that I will appreciate forever. And that they took very, very good care of her. And they literally told me to my face, we're going to treat her like she's our child. And so if there were more doctors like that, it would be so much better for everybody. But I appreciate the doctors that, you know, they kind of know the industry you're in. And it's like, but they don't ask any questions.
Yeah.
And they're just say, Mom, whatever you're doing, it's working. I'm like, thank you. That's all I need to know.
And not for nothing, the fact that they respect that, because they could really just call, right?
Yeah, they could.
On some bullshit.
Yeah,
but
they could.
The reality is that if you see the progress and you see the improvement, something is working.
Exactly. Something. And I appreciate that they leave her be. They didn't ask me any questions. I didn't give any answers.
I love it.
So I just left it at that.
So the other, I guess, blessing from, you know, obviously your child's a blessing and her health. But the other blessing is now your stance for cannabis and that now becoming the party. Like, let's get into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
Because I'm sure that leads to that.
Yes. It was more reason to start the party. And I remember having a conversation with Red, and he said, you know, we could do so much more if we were to really, like, he was like, I want to do more than just talk about, like, I want to change this. I want to get it descheduled. Like, we were really having a real conversation about it. And he's like, because I'm tired of seeing things be the way they are. And everybody is just like, oh, that's just what it is. He's like, that doesn't have to be that way. So the party was a way for us to create something that's just for cannabis. It's like, you know, you use it as a way to not only impact policy and legislation around cannabis, but using it also as a way to create this umbrella for everybody to be able to come together underneath. Like he always says, the Democratic Party, you know, they've got their platform, and whatever their issues are, people that are Democrats, they can take it to their constituents. Then the same thing for the Republicans. He's like, but there's nothing for cannabis. And yet there's so much talk around cannabis. So he's like, you know, instead of asking for a seat at the table or asking for permission, we're like, no, we're going to create our own table. And then we get to decide who sits down. And that's kind of where the United Empowerment Party came from, which we were the National Cannabis Party first. Okay. But we had a we changed the name because of the issues we had with banking and just so many things behind mm-hmm. the scenes that we realized, okay, this is why this is even more important, because now we get to see what the businesses go through. Like, you just wake up, your account closed, like nothing. No warning, no email, no phone call, no dinner. Like, you could have bought me a bag of chips from the bodega before you closed my joint. Like, something. It just didn't. It was so mind-boggling to me. And they had everything. The FEC paperwork. I was like, we are a federally recognized political party. We don't touch the plant. Yeah. Didn't matter. It had cannabis in the name.
So it's funny she says that, because that actually happened to me. One of the companies, cannabis companies I worked for, one of the times traveling, actually I was in LA. I'm literally driving to the airport, about to get on my flight back to Jersey. I go to stop at, I think it was an IHOP, like, or a Denny. It was like some breakfast spot. And I go to use my card because I'm on a work trip, so obviously I'm expensing it. Card decline. It's odd. I just use the card down the block to get gas because you got to fill up your rental, right? So I fill up the rental. I'm going to get some food, go to the airport. Nope. Swipe, decline, pay it real quick with my personal card. Call my boss, like, hey, my business card is, they're like, yeah, they just killed our account. And that was that. And then, you know, a couple weeks, months go by, company figures out a new bank to bank with. And then you get, like, I literally, in my first cannabis company, went through five different.
Like processing payroll?
Processing companies. And when I first started, I was using my own. So I just expense everything. I use my own credit card. Shout out to that Southwest Chase card. I ran that motherfucker up. But, like, listen, I had Companion Pass in, like, 8 months.
Wow. I took one. I know that's right.
Right. One of our anniversary trips was I used all my Marriott points to go to JW Marriott in Cancun. I used my Southwest points to get my flight and the Companion Pass to get my wife's. We ain't paid for nothing for that trip. But that's how much I was expensing. And then, but yeah, you run through credit cards. It's better now, but yeah, it was rough before.
Once they pass that thing,
yeah,
as the game about to change.
Yeah, it's gonna change tremendously.
How do you know Red?
So I have been knowing him for some years now. I'm little sis, so you know, like, he's always been like a mentor for me, even though he feels like I mentor him. And we started with just on the business side with the technology and everything, and then started going more into getting really involved in the industry from the political standpoint, and just looking at wherever we can help build things out to where we can initiate things, initiate programming, initiate you know, different initiatives and things like that in different states, most specifically where we are, Jersey and New York. And it just came from just having a conversation about, like, he's always like, yo, so what you trying to do? Like, I'm always, my thing is hashtag what we doing. Like, everybody see me, they be like, yo, Steph, what we doing? So he'll just hit me like, yo, sis, what's the word? Like, what we doing? What we up to? So that kind of just shaped everything now to where we are, and him being, well, kind of both of us being the face, of course, but me being out there more because his schedule's crazy. So, and I felt like he needed to do something to really expand his legacy and start to diversify that in different ways. And he agreed and felt like, you know, I've been doing this a long time. And he's like, if you ever hear any of his interviews, go back to some of them and he'll literally say, I feel like I've gotten more awards in cannabis than I even did in music. And it's funny when he says that, but I get where he's coming from, because he should be recognized for what he's done in the industry as of late, but just overall, he's been advocating for this plant since the early 90s. Mm-hmm. And yeah. There's a lot of people that, like, will randomly will be out somewhere and they'll be like, yo, I learned how to roll a blunt because of you. Like, so it's so amazing to see him get his flowers and for him to, oh, like, he's such a people person. So when people meet him, people are, like, kind of shocked, like, yo, he's so down to earth. And that's just literally who he is. He loves people. He'll talk to you. Like, we can be in the middle of about to go hit a panel, And he'll be sitting there talking to somebody, and I'm like, bro, we gotta go. Like, and he'll be like, pull me away, but because he doesn't want to interrupt the conversation. But you know, I've just spent so many of these past like 7-8 years just really watching the way that he's been able to transition what he's done in his music into an industry that he's kind of always been in indirectly.
Yeah.
But to be able to do it now and to really represent Jersey, like, we got an actual, like, licensing program passed in New Jersey that people may not even know about, the technical assistance program. We worked on that for about 10 months last year, from January all the way to October 22nd, which was when it passed. Well, the technical assistance program is going to allow conditional licensing for legacy operators. And that was a huge deal. No other state has it. So to me, I felt like Jersey is very proactive about being more innovative in how they do things. Now, is everything perfect? No, but at least they're willing to listen, and they will actually sit down with different people and say, you know, this is what we want to do. What do you think we should do? Or how should we structure this? And that's how that all came about. So it just goes to show how important it is to get involved. And we wanted to kind of be, you know, lead that pathway for other people to follow and say, look, this is the way we did it, or create these different workable models that could be duplicated everywhere.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of folks in hip hop that this was sort of like directly but indirectly, or maybe subconsciously, really part of their branding more than they realize. And they really impacted the culture. I mean, when we take a few steps back, right? Like the movie How High.
Yeah.
when it comes to Red, Wiz, Snoop, who else is a major?
Mev.
That this was like
2 Chainz.
Yeah, you know, like this was like
from Cypress Hill.
Yeah, yes, yeah. This was part of really their music and the makeup. So I think it was incredible that you told him, like, you need to solidify your legacy, Styles P, right?
Yes, definitely.
Solidify your legacy in this space, because you really contributed to the culture, really from the exterior. But now that this is a legal market, or a legalizing market, they need to be major players in this.
Absolutely.
I think the thing I like about it is, you know, you could easily just rely on his celebrity. Those of you that don't know who Redman is, it's like New Jersey icon.
Yes.
Right? One of the best lyricists, hands down, period. Period. Right? By himself. Not just Red and Meth, also just Redman by himself.
Yeah.
And not even argue, the best Cribs, MTV Cribs episode of all time. Like, the greatest classic MTV Cribs episode of all time. But I really like the fact that outside of the celebrity, you're doing it in the legal, political way, right? It's easy to just be like, yo, we support cannabis, and you get out there, and you put them on a board, and you say it, Red, right? And instead it's like, no, we're actually setting up programs recognized by the state, actually doing a nationally recognized political party. So, like, doing it the legal, right way so that it can't be denied. Down the line, like, you can't deny and go like, oh, that's not really real, they're not really doing nothing. Well, no, it's legit. Yep. It's really real, right? And I think that's a really important, smart part of it, because a lot of times when people think of doing something in the cannabis space, it's like, all right, well, how do we do it illegally first, right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, how do we just hustle and figure it out and do it?
Yep.
And to have the opposite approach, like, no, how do we do it legit first?
Right.
So, yeah, no, that's big.
What's the next steps? Where are you guys taking it? Like, what, like, now you guys are both engulfed in weed.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? What's happening?
Literally got it on the necklace and the earrings.
Yes. Oh, yeah, listen, accessory queen. Like, look, on the bracelet, like, I swear, if nobody knew, they'd be like, that's a dead giveaway. She definitely smokes weed. But next for us is descheduling. Like, we are in the middle of a big descheduling campaign. We are advocating, not even just advocating, we are pushing for every single person, not just people in the cannabis space, but everyone across the country. Right now, there are 110 million registered voters that are in support of cannabis. which is insane. And just even if we were to just activate, say, 2 or 3% of those people, it could be it could make a huge difference. And I feel that our voices need to be out there amplifying people to get them civically engaged. People need to understand the legislative process. People need to vote based on who the candidate actually is and not party affiliation. Because most people, a lot of people go to vote and they just check off whoever is Democrat, whoever is Republican. They don't even know who the person is. They don't know who they are. They don't know what their platform is. They don't go and do the research to see what bills have they supported, what have they sponsored. Because you can literally go and find out what a state senator or representative has supported, what they've sponsored, just like you can do the same with the U.S. senator or representative.
Where they get their funding.
Exactly. And if you follow the money, you'll definitely see a lot of what's really going on. But these are things that I feel we need to be educating everyone about, but especially our community, because a lot of us don't vote or we're not registered. So there's some people who literally win by default. They don't even have to work for the votes or get it. And I feel if these are the people that are governing your city, your state, the, you know, the rest of the country, you need to make sure you're holding these elected officials and politicians accountable to what they say they're going to do. And in the event that they don't, you vote them out. Your vote is currency. Every politician, if you really look at the scope of their career, they've made so much money being in that office, being in that position. And you put them there. You give them the power. And they work for you. It's not the other way around. So the more that people really begin to understand that and understand that they can push for whatever it is they want. I actually am a champion of people trolling politicians. I'm serious. It's like, if y'all are going to get on social media and troll people, then how about we troll with a purpose and call these people up and have your little message ready. Everybody say the same thing and know that when you call, email, write, whatever, by law, they have to respond. So if there mm-hmm. are 500, 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 people calling that senator's office every single day or every week, what do you think is going to happen? Mm. They're going to be overwhelmed and they're going to say, okay, we need to talk to somebody because we have 150 emails.
Answer one of those fucking calls, please.
200, right. So I feel like we have to be strategic and we also have to hit from every angle. Do the research, get with other people that know more than you do, people that do go and lobby. You don't have to, you know, work for a lobbying firm to go and lobby. We've gone to D.C. and lobbied. We've talked to different senators and representatives and educated them because a lot of them don't know.
Right.
So it's important for us to be able to not only push for descheduling, help people understand why we don't want to reschedule. They're talking about rescheduling it to a Schedule 3. That will only lift restrictions enough for there to be research and development. But who's going to conduct that R&D? Who does that put in control? The FDA. And who is going to benefit from that? The pharmaceutical industry. So that could lead to people only being able to get cannabis by prescription.
Yeah, and, you know, shout out to a real hustler, number one scammer in the game, Senator Nancy Pelosi, her and her husband getting them big scamming dollars. But I think the other part that people forget is the same way alcohol at one point was considered a medicine, right, rum, THC was too. There are such things as THC pills. Yep. They've been fully legal for
Sativex.
Yeah, for a dumb long time. And, you know, if you're on the brink of death, you can get one. But, like, as much as the government would like to act as if there's no research on cannabis and everything and nothing's backed, it used to be, it still is, Sativex. Like, you can literally get a doctor-prescribed cannabis pill, which means there's years of research. Just saying. It's just commonplace knowledge.
No, you are absolutely right. And that's why we want to address the federal schism, because How is the DEA and the FDA right at the same time? They can't be. The DEA says it's a Schedule 1 controlled substance, which means it has no known medical benefit, highly addictive, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. Then you have the FDA that has 5 pharmaceutical drugs on the market that are derived from cannabis. So which one is it?
Right.
So it's a total contradiction to your own scheduling. Like, what you classify as a Schedule 1. And the fact that, shockingly, a lot of people don't know fentanyl is a Schedule 2.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I think we brought that up once, that fentanyl is a lower schedule. Yep. And I only know that because
and
I used...
Schedule 5.
Well,
so I used like, to make... it makes sense.
I used to make 1 million vials of fentanyl every day.
Wow.
Yeah, he worked
legal. I used to run a pharmaceutical company, their production. And, yeah, watch, 1 million vials a day of fentanyl go by. That's the company I left to come to cannabis. But, yeah, so just saying. It's nuts. It really doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's wild. And I think that we have a great chance at getting it done. The power is in our hands. It's just what we decide to do with it. And the more people that we can activate and that we can educate about the differences, because some people really – didn't realize that rescheduling and descheduling two completely separate things.
Completely different.
And
things.
Descheduling, and they're like, well, what will that do? It'll be completely legal.
Well, tell me this, just to see the other side of things, because we talked about this a couple episodes ago. Mm-hmm. Descheduling can also mean that now cannabis gets treated like every other crop in America, the same way that we have potatoes and peaches mm-hmm. and oranges and things that are imported and exported from different places that states that are more prominently grow that, right? I know some of you fools thought we thought only Georgia peaches.
Are y'all stupid?
we know other places grow the shit.
Just because I said, where do peaches come from? Georgia. Georgia peach. Dumbasses.
Yeah, it was.
It,
was
it doesn't mean that's the only place. Like, the existence of one thing doesn't mean the absence of all things.
Right.
But y'all are dumb.
But
anyway, sorry.
Be that as it may, we talked about that as a possibility, right? Because, you know, my background is in policy. So I like to look at really the holistic picture of things. And some things, when you frame it the other way with the rescheduling from a research perspective, you're right. But then also, who does that benefit? And it is mostly pharmaceuticals because they're the ones who are going to conduct the research or have the money to back the research or... But then when you look on the other side, do you think that there's issues that could stem from that?
What, from descheduling? I think it will present some challenges because now how does that affect what's currently in place in the states?
Exactly.
So is it going to have some things that are where framework has to be built around it and the right infrastructure? Absolutely. But this is why... we've been saying you don't wait for that to happen. Even though we're pushing for descheduling, we're also putting everybody else on notice. Start building these things now. Whoever can build the model for what interstate commerce is going to look like, do it now. Whoever's going to build the framework for what import export is going to look like, do it now. It doesn't exist. There's a blank canvas for everybody to create whatever they want. Whatever doesn't exist, you have the power to create. So I feel that people need to be more proactive and start doing those things right now. Because at some point when that happens, who do you think they're going to go to? Whoever has it already, whoever builds it. And I've just noticed with government, a lot of the time they don't want to figure it out. They'd rather somebody else figure it out and they'll just pay you to do it. You know, that's how government contracts come about. Right. But if people start thinking about things that way, and start to use that creativity to build things besides just looking at one part of the industry, it'll help us get to those places a lot faster. Because that way, when we're talking about descheduling, we can say, well, we've got this in place already, or we know exactly how this is going to move, or we've already got transportation companies that are ready and the plan is there. You know, the software, the security, all of that is there to be ready to go when it happens. But too oftentimes people wait until it's too late or, okay, it's descheduled. Now what? Now everybody's scrambling trying to figure it out. So that's where I see the challenges of what that could bring, because then it's like, what do people do? Do something about it now. And because we could be 2 or 3 years off from that. And honestly, it probably would be better that way so that we can put those things in place. But if it happened like tomorrow, people wouldn't know what to do. They'd be like, yay, it's descheduled. Okay, what do we do now? You know, so I feel that this is where people start building companies or start converting your skills into cannabis, because there's still a lot that we haven't built and we don't have a healthy ecosystem yet. And we need all those moving parts to work together. We need so many things that we don't have right now. And the states, they don't know what it is. They don't know what we need. And because they're regulating something they don't know anything about. So I feel we need to step up more and start to fill those spaces, especially, you know, us. Like, we always say, oh, we don't get to do this. We're the last. You have an opportunity to be the first right now. Yep. So it's like, your excuse?
That's true. But that's why I'm glad that you said that, because this is a important part of educating, right? We get so bogged down in one topic that we don't think about the steps after. And in the show, a lot of what we talk about, especially for Black and Brown businesses, is sustainability. And a lot of times, because we are so in the moment and we're, again, focused in and honed in on something, and we don't think about how are we going, what is our 3-year plan, our 5-year plan, our 8-year plan? And the descheduling could have a lot of benefits, but if we don't really start to develop what that model looks like, it is going to, like, people need to realize what they're asking for, right? And it's okay. Either direction is going to have some sort of impact that needs to be worked around.
Right.
So an infrastructure and a framework needs to be made around that so that the people that are currently in place can still thrive. It doesn't kill any markets.
Right.
It makes sense. It makes things more affordable. It makes the capability to get things from different locations, it has a lot of benefit to it. It also makes it fucking legal.
Right. And now we can talk about completely being decriminalized. Like, right, now letting people out of jail. And we know that there's pushback there because, let's be honest, we know that the, you know, private prisons benefit from that. They make a lot of money. They've made a lot of money. Like, I couldn't believe, I forgot the numbers until somebody mentioned it today about stop and frisk in New York. Like, I remember that. I'm from Brooklyn, so I remember like the paddy wagons going through the projects, just rounding up the same people every single weekend. I saw it all. I used to help my peoples too, because, like, look, hey, they coming through. You might want to get up out of here. But, you know, it was real, and it was traumatizing to see people get thrown on the ground for a dime bag. Like, for real?
I know, that's crazy.
Like, it was insane. And they said 700,000 arrests during stop and frisk. That is crazy.
Yes.
Like, that's insane. And the fact that you didn't even have to have it on you. And then if all you had was weed on you, I've seen where they'll plant something else on somebody. Like, it was a lot of corruption.
Yeah.
And cannabis was an opportunity. It was like low-hanging fruit for mass incarceration of Black and Brown people.
Yep.
That's just what it was. And it's still happening in other states. And one of the states that stick out for me so much that I really feel that they need a lot of help, they need our help, is Louisiana. Like, Louisiana is, like, the fact they say you're 7 times more likely to be arrested for cannabis in Louisiana if you are Black and Brown. 7 times. That is insane.
Yeah.
And the fact that people, they do a lot of time. Bernard Noble, his story, he talked about how, I think he did, if I'm not mistaken, it was like he was sentenced to like 11 years for having a joint in his pocket or something. It was like some crazy number that you shouldn't have been in jail for that. And you hear stories like this. Corvain Cooper, that's family. Shout out to him. Corvain, yep. And Anthony, 40 tons. He was doing life before he was granted clemency by Trump, right before he got out of office. But why was this man serving life?
Yes.
For a plant. And there's several other people. I can't remember the number now. I think it may be 5 or 6 that I can remember that are currently doing life for cannabis. So I feel that even though it may have challenges, descheduling is the, I don't want to hear reschedule anything. It's either deschedule it or do nothing until you do.
Yep.
Because to reschedule it, it just, it's not, to me, it's like a slap in the face. And I feel that because of so many people that have suffered, it's a difference in being arrested, you know, not to take away from people who are not black and brown, but we were targeted and we were traumatized. Like, it's a difference in being targeted and to where in your neighborhood, in your community where you grew up, this is what you saw.
Yep.
And so it needs to be descheduled, because it's like all of those years of terrorizing neighborhoods, tearing families apart over a plant, like, you owe that to these people. You owe that to all of us that had to watch that.
And live through that.
And live through that. Families. So, and, yep. Absolutely. Yep. And so I feel that that's the only option.
Yeah. And the setback of the black and brown community.
Oh, absolutely. Right?
Because we could have been this thriving nature that is just starting to bud right now, mm-hmm. that I feel. Shout out to fucking black excellence. I feel all of it right now. We a little behind on that, though, because we could have, right? In that 80s crack era, all that nonsense yeah. was wild for no reason, because we didn't need that. Listen, I love the work that you're doing. I'm so proud of you. I love you. Dope black women that are just fucking killing it. The mom story hit me different. I didn't know the depths of that. You know, I have a little baby too. She's four. So I'm so glad that she's still with us and thriving,
yes.
and that cannabis, the plant, is helping. Look, I'm already cracking my voice. Let me wrap it up. All right. Shout out to Mud Brothers, by the way. Corey and
this
I.
This was an accident.
Super accident. Yes, we are not twinning on purpose, but we look cute and obviously straight out the mud. You know, we fuck with our guys. Please follow Safita. Get in tune with the movement. You know, continue to just voice and be the change.
Absolutely.
So can we get the where do people go?
Yes,
absolutely. So activate. Go to our website, www.unitedempowermentparty.org. On Instagram, we're at United Empowerment Party. On Twitter, we're at United Empowerment Party. I am at She's So Brooklyn. That's She's So BRKLYN on Twitter and Instagram. And, you know, hit me up, hit us up, let us know how we can support if it's something you want us to pull up to. And we also have the descheduling campaign on our website. And we have a tab on our site where if you click on vote, you can actually put in your state. And it'll show you if you're registered to vote or not. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be putting a lot more tools on there to really engage the community so that they can get more involved.
Awesome.
Super dope.
Shout out to Redman, too, for, you know, y'all yes. coming together and making this dope brainchild that is a movement. Yes. Go outside.
Brick City.
Get activated. And thank you for tuning in.
Get well.
Peace, y'all.